And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
And hello everybody and welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 155, coming at you, as always, from beautiful Chicago, Illinois. I'm Tom Harris, your host, and it's summer now, folks. Yes, we have the first day of summer this past week, and we have had some beautiful weather here in Chicago. Hopefully it's all the same for you guys. Been trying to get out a little bit more and explore and be outside and do stuff. And of course, that doesn't really work when you're working 12-hour days, does it? Yeah, that's kind of been the issue all along, hasn't it? So because I've been so busy and because I've had so much going on, I really don't have a lot to talk about here at the beginning of the show. But of course, we are going to be continuing our exploration of the Friends and DeFalco run on Thor. So we might as well just get right down to it with our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, Mighty Thor.
Indeed. And this week we are looking at The Mighty Thor number 387. Has a cover date of January 1988. Retailed for 75 cents. Cover art is by Ron Frenz and Brett Breeding. We have a cover blurb, Judgment Day. And the cover shows Thor, and he's dressed in this battle armor, like the Simonson armor, and he's hiding behind this big purple rock sort of thing. And in the background, we see these two sort of kind of yellow gold plateau stack things that just seem rather conveniently placed. And standing on top of it, we have a giant red figure with his arm outstretched and his doing a thumbs down motion with his hand. And of course, we recognize this character as being one of the Celestials. This is one of the characters that Jack Kirby created for his Eternals series back in the late 1970s. And we'll find out what they do, of course, during the context of the story. But of course, they go onto planets and they interfere with their evolution. And then, you know, a couple million years later, they come and judge to see whether they're worthy of survival. So we'll find out what this is all about inside the issue. Opening up to the splash page, of course, we have the credits. Tom DeFalco was the writer. Ron Frenz was the penciler. Brett Breeding was the inker. John Workman lettered it. Evelyn Stein was the colorist. And the editor was Ralph Macchio. And the splash page shows Thor floating in outer space. Looks like he's gagging here, trying to get his breath. And this just comes off right off the end of last issue, where Thor tried to teleport to Earth, but he ended up in the middle of deep space. I don't know that this really makes a lot of sense as a story development. And I think I might have touched on this last time, but hasn't Thor been going back and forth to Earth pretty regularly since the Rainbow Bridge broke? I think he has. And so this doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. Unless Asgard has moved hugely further than it was, and I have no reason to believe that that's the case. It just doesn't seem quite right to me. Anyway, so we have a little bit of exposition here. Mere moments ago, the mighty Thor bid farewell to his beloved homeworld Asgard and entered a dimensional vortex which was supposed to transport him back to the planet Earth. But, and Thor is thinking to himself here, I have materialized somewhere amid the vast void of space. Even I cannot survive out here for long. Already a numbing chill seeks to overwhelm me. Already my strength begins to flee. And so he's kind of clutching at his throat, because that's what you do when you can't breathe. My lungs cry for oxygen, but I will not fall victim to despair. I will not meekly surrender myself to death. The God of Thunder shall find a way to survive. I will endure. And he starts to whirl his hammer around because, you know, in space, he can create that kind of momentum to pull him towards his destination. But, of course, he can't really. But, okay, we'll just have to accept it for the sake of the comic, I guess. But he sees in the distance a planet, and he knows it's not Earth, but he thinks maybe there's air there. So he whirls his hammer around, and he flings the hammer, and he's on his way. And the caption says, ignoring the physical agony which blazes through him, desperately fighting to stay consciousness. Shouldn't that be to stay unconsciousness? I think it should. The son of Odin unerringly hurls his enchanted hammer towards the remote world. And he's thinking to himself, carry me, faithful Mjolnir, to yon far-off sphere. And may the gods have mercy on us. And Mjolnir is kind of dragging him down to the planet. And we then shift to the planet, and we see the kind of a chaotic scene that's going on here. We have a bunch of people, they're down in this sort of pit sort of thing. And they're being blasted at by these people with, like, energy beams or laser beams or whatever. And they don't look like they're too happy. And we kind of have some people, shadowy people in the background, and are having a conversation. The general populace is desperate, my friends. They are rioting in the streets and willing to lay waste to the entire city because they know we do not have enough spacecraft to evacuate everyone from this doomed planet. Those poor, pathetic fools would do anything to gain entrance to this spaceport. Anything. And we see the guy talking is this big, muscular, bulky guy, and he's wearing a big, fancy harness, and he's got blue skin, kind of like a Kree. I wonder if he is Kree. Maybe it'll say. But only a very select few are destined to escape the destruction of Pangoria. Pangoria? Wasn't that a magazine about horror movies that Howard Cruise used to do cartoons for? I think so. Only the friends of Pegas, the Pirate King, will live for a price.
We've already paid your outrageous price, mighty Pegas. A fortune in golden jewels. Please let us go before it's too late. Here's my ticket. And an additional 10,000 credits for your trouble.
What? You seek to bribe me?
And this guy actually looks like one of the futuristic people from a couple of issues ago where we had Mullet Thor.
With a mere 10,000 credits? I am insulted, outraged at such a petty offer. This is no time to be cheap.
And he takes out a pink laser beam and he kills the guy with a bazaak. And then there's a security alarm going off and he's like, the security alarm. I must return to the command center at once.
Think on what you have just seen, my friends, and dig deep into your pockets, or suffer the fatal consequences.
And there's all these alien guys kind of standing around looking alarmed by this dead guy. And the Pegas goes into, I guess, his headquarters or spaceship or something.
What is it, my loyal minions? What's wrong?
We've just detected an unidentified object streaking towards Pangoria, my lord. This could be the moment we feared, the agent of our destruction.
No, it's too soon. I must have more time. Prepare the Doomsday Defense Missile. We'll try to knock that thing out of the sky.
We see that they're using this radar scope that looks a whole lot like an Earth radar scope from like a 1960s Navy movie. They fire this giant missile, and it's this big phallic-looking missile because, you know, missiles look that way. And we get a little bit of exposition.
Possessing enough explosive power to devastate an entire world, the Doomsday device thunders upward, closely followed by two drone ships which will record the destructive confrontation. Within seconds, it rips through the planet's protective atmosphere, reaching its onrushing target, the enchanted hammer of an unconscious thunder god.
And the two meet, and there's this huge red explosion, and we see kind of things flying off. It looks like Thor has been thrown clear. We don't really see that. Back on the planet's surface, they're all celebrating, and they're like, we did it! A direct hit! And Pegas is asking,
what is the status of the target? Was it destroyed? Vaporized?
I'm trying to get a transmission from one of the drone ships now, sir. Look! It's a man! He must have hit the warhead direct center and been traveling fast enough to pass completely through it before it could detonate.
And one of the other flunkies is like,
aye, but the shockwaves alone should have been enough to tear him apart.
And Pegasus is saying, idiots, can you not see that we've attacked the wrong man? He doesn't look anything like the one who will come to destroy us. And he's thinking to himself, but who is this man, if man he be? Why did he choose this particular time to come here? Prepare my sky sled. And so we next see Pegasus, and he's on they call it a sky sled. And it's this sort of disc thing with looks like a jet engine or something attached, and like the control panel. It looks a lot like something you'd see in a Legion of Superheroes comic. And Pegasus is riding out, and he's saying, I shall personally investigate the remains of this stranger from the stars. And he's thinking to himself, if by some miracle he did survive the blast, he may possess sufficient power to help us. He could become the key to our salvation. And they find this giant crater in the middle of a desert, which is apparently nearby the city. And they say, there he is! We found him! But look at the size of that crater! He must have crashed with the force of a blazing meteor. We're lucky he struck in a deserted area.
Hurry, see if he still lives.
And they are going to investigate. Pegasus is like, well?
He's alive, my lord, but just barely.
And the guys are trying to pick up his hammer.
Ugh, can't even budge his hammer. It must weigh tons.
Forget the hammer, says Pegasus, and get this man to a revitalization capsule. He must be restored to consciousness and full health as soon as possible.
So they pick up Thor and they carry him off. And Pegasus is saying, our lives may depend on it. And we then shift scenes and we are on Asgard. And once again, futuristic Asgard, you know, kind of the Kirby Asgard that was never drawn exactly the same way twice. Yeah, that's what we're looking at now. And, of course, it's standing in the middle of space. And we're viewing it from, like, the end where the Rainbow Bridge has been shattered and is kind of in tatters, like cloth. And that it actually looks pretty interesting. At the precise moment across the universe, far beyond the mortal concepts of time and space, there stands mighty Asgard, the legendary home of the Norse gods. And we hear Heimdall here.
Let me pass. I would have a word with Baldur the Brave.
Tell our beloved monarch that Heimdall craves an audience.
I fear that we must turn thee away, faithful one. Noble Baldur left strict instructions that he not be disturbed.
So be it. I shall not presume to interrupt his thoughts. I shall return anon.
And Heimdall turns to go away. But he hears something. You know, Heimdall has these super senses, and he hears something that makes him a little bit suspicious, and he says it sounds like danger. We then cut to the inside of Baldur's chamber, and it's, of course, really super futuristic now. No more of this Simonson ancient Norse thing. No, this is super sci-fi, even more so than Stanley and Jack Kirby ever did. And it's got this really sleek, kind of super futuristic throne room. And Baldur is standing in the corner. He's just kind of thinking to himself, where's Thor? What's happened to him? Did he ever reach the planet Earth? Or is he now forever lost amid the endless streams of time and space? I never should have granted him permission to leave Asgard. The journey to Earth is much too dangerous, now that the Rainbow Bridge is shattered, and we are no longer bound to the mortal plane. If any ill has befallen him, the fault is mine, and mine alone. And he's kind of lost in thought, and he doesn't see this sort of portal forming behind him, this big red, whirling, simmering sort of dimensional portal. And these three dudes are coming through who have these big wavy knives, and they look kind of dangerous, and they kind of strike Baldur from behind, and they're like,
strike him down. With one savage blow, we can deprive the hated Asgardians of their beloved leader. The fangs of Set drink deep.
And they're going to go stab Baldur, but we hear a Braca boom, and Heimdall comes bursting through the doors, because obviously he heard what was going on.
And he's like, do not despair, Baldur. Heimdall will soon be at thy side. Even though these misguided fools have tried to bar my way.
We see the guards like going flying the other way.
Even though brave Baldur be protected here in Asgard by enchantments that make him invulnerable to all harm, save a projectile of mistletoe, way to advertise your king's weakness to his enemies, huh? I know, I mean, all right. Why advertise this? Still, this enemy from a realm beyond our own, and may not be subject to those spells. Heimdall is lunging forward. Baldur, how art thou? Well, my friend, thanks to thy timely intervention, and Baldur's fighting against these dudes, and it's going okay. Forgive us, vigilant one. We thought thou had gone mad. We did not realize our liege was in danger. And so the guards are joining the fight as well, and so you've got basically 5 against 3 assassins or whatever. Never fear, brother, says Heimdall. You acted in good faith, and we now fight in the same cause. For Asgard, an honor eternal, and they're slamming these guys down. Pretty soon they've defeated them, and the 3 guys are just laying on the ground here. Thy sovereign salutes thee, Heimdall. Once again, thy keen senses have nobly served the throne of Asgard. Aye, but who are these assassins? Asks Heimdall. It's obvious they journeyed here by means of a dimensional rift, but from whence came they? And why did they attack thee? And Baldur doesn't know. He's saying, I do not know the answers to your questions, but I fear this may be merely the beginning, and dark, grim days await us all. And he's thinking to himself, Asgard may need the strength and power of mighty Thor more than ever before, but where is he? And we then shift scenes again, back to the planet where Thor has crashed, and we see the sunrise kind of coming up over the horizon. And Thor awakens, and he's inside this sort of racing car bed sort of thing. It looks a lot like some of the sort of the Kirby healing beds or sleeping beds that we've seen before. It's kind of enclosed, and it's got like these medical monitors and stuff on it. And Thor's waking up, and he hears a voice. It's like, it's about time. I was starting to think you'd never wake up. And we see Thor waking up, and he's in the middle of this bed thing. And there's this chick there, and she has got this sort of weird, windswept-looking blonde hair. And she's wearing this pink, I don't know, it's like a cat suit, but it's got all these weird holes cut into it. So it's kind of like something that Mike Grell would have designed back in the 70s. She says, name's Myla. Pegasus assigned me to attend your needs. All of them. Ooh, bom chicka bom bom. Didn't think I'd have to do much considering the shape you were in when you arrived. Guess those revitalizers are as good as people say.
Who is this Pegasus? Says Thor.
He's the top man hereabouts, the one who saved your life.
I must thank him.
He'll keep. Anything I can do for you?
Prithee, can thou direct me to Mjolnir, my faithful hammer?
Your hammer has a name? Okay, sounds good to me. I can take you to it, if you're sure that's all you want.
Aye.
And she's thinking to herself, cute but weird. And so they get into the sky platform thing, and they're flying away. And she's kind of explaining to him what's going on here. Pangoria is a small world, far from the main spaceways. Guess that's why the pirates first settled here. They conquered the native inhabitants a few 100 years ago and have been using it as a haven ever since. We used to play host to the scum of the galaxy, but that's before the riots started.
And Thor's like, riots?
Yeah, seems the planet's about to be destroyed, annihilated, and there just aren't enough spaceships to go around.
Why is the planet in danger? What threatens it?
Ask Pegasus. I've got a hunch he's real anxious to discuss that very subject with you. Now, what gets me here is they're going out to the crater where Thor was found, okay? And we know the hammer's there because nobody can lift it, blah, blah, blah. Not that we haven't seen machines lift Thor's hammer easily in the past, but anyway. Why didn't Thor just call his hammer to himself? You know, just one of those questions. So anyway, they arrive at the crater, and Pegasus is there, and he's got this big, huge crane-looking thing, and it's got a cable wrapped around the hammer. Looks like it's trying to lift it. Hail, mighty Pegasus, says the chick. I bring you a visitor.
Pegasus is thinking, it's a stranger from the stars. But how did he recover so quickly? Greetings, my friend. You're looking far more fit than the last time I beheld you. I'm glad you're here. As you can see, I'm having a bit of difficulty in my attempts to move this confounded mallet of yours.
And Thor just reaches down and picks up Mjolnir easily. And he says, "Aye, Mjolnir hath oft been the bane of mortal men during its long and illustrious life." And Pegasus is thinking to himself, "Incredible! That hammer withstood the efforts of my mightiest cranes, and yet he lifts it as easily as if it were a small child."
"I am told that you saved my life, Pegasus. I am in your debt, and bound by honor to repay you."
"I'm glad you feel that way, pal," says Pegasus, and claps him on the shoulder. "Come, let us return to my command center, where we can talk." And we shift them to the command center, and we have Pegasus and Thor and Myla sort of following behind, all slinky.
"Myla has already informed you that Pangoria is in peril."
"Aye, but she did not tell me why," says Thor.
"Behold the answer to all your questions. Behold the terror which threatens the lives of my people and the very existence of this peaceful planet."
And we turn the page and we see what Thor is looking at. And it's like this big, huge cosmic voyeuroscope, big machine. And it shows us the Celestial standing on top of those two plateaus, kind of like we saw on the cover. And he's got his thumb down and there's spaceships kind of flying around. And there's like stars and planets and shit flying around. And we got a really well-drawn full-page spread here of the entire scene. And Pegasus is saying,
"From the awe in your voice and the astonishment in your eyes, I can only assume that you recognize Arishem, the Celestial."
And we get a little bit of exposition here.
"Many are the legends which surround this race of cosmic beings. They are said to be space gods who journey across the universe, conducting genetic experiments and mucking around with evolutionary chains. Eventually, they send Arishem to judge if the dominant life forms have proven themselves worthy enough to survive. We recently discovered him standing atop those distant peaks. We don't know how long he's been there observing our planet, but it's quite obvious that he's already judged Pangoria, and we've failed."
And at that moment, there's like an earth tremor, and the people are being shaken and tossed around a little bit inside this headquarters.
"Behold, strange tremors have already begun to assault the planet, and violent storms ravage it. Judgment Day is upon us. We are all doomed, unless you can help us."
And, of course, you know, the earthquake has thrown Myla right into Thor's arms, of course. And Thor's thinking to himself, "I've already fought the Celestials and lost. Their power is far greater than my own. It is death to defy them. And yet..." He makes a momentous decision here.
"Myla, when I first arrived on your planet, I carried a sack."
"Oh, my."
"Yes. I'll get it for you," says Myla. And we shift to, I don't know, moments later, an hour later, doesn't really say. And Thor has his sack finally, and he is donning his battle armor, which apparently is keeping in the sack. And Myla's like,
"Don't be a fool. You don't know us anything. Save yourself if you can."
"No," says Thor. "Though your people are pirates, thieves, and worst, I will not desert you. Such is not the way of Thor. I am sworn to protect the innocent, to reward the just."
So why is he defending pirates?
"And to punish the guilty."
Oh, I see. So it's up to Thor to punish the pirates, not the Celestials. I see how this goes. And Thor goes taking off after the Celestials, and a very strangely drawn panel here of the kind of people standing in the background while Thor takes off. It just seems a little off.
"Even though the foe I face doth possess power enough to devastate entire galaxies, I do not fear him. For as long as Thor doth prevail, he shall ever be a force for courage, honor, and glory."
And Pegasus is thinking to himself,
"The fool doesn't have a chance. But perhaps he can delay the Celestial long enough for me to safely skip out on this condemned mudball."
And we see Thor, he's flying around Arishem and just kind of orbiting him, seeing what's up. And he's thinking to himself,
"It is said that Arishem observes upon it for 50 years before he renders his verdict. How can that be? Did I not recently battle him on the planet Earth when that blessed sphere was similarly menaced?"
And that's a reference, incidentally, back to Thor number 300, which was the last Celestial saga.
"Can it be that the Celestials are so far beyond the ken of men and immortal alike that they can manifest themselves in more than one place at the same time?"
And yeah, that seems like as likely an explanation as any other. And Thor decides he's going to yell at the Celestial.
Hear me, Space God. This planet is under the protection of Thor, God of Thunder and Prince of Asgard. I order thee to leave this world and spare its people.
And, of course, Ahrishem doesn't make any kind of response.
It's no use. He ignores me as if I were not but a petty insect. But I shall have his attention, even if I must call upon the forces of the storm itself to win it for me.
And he's summoning up a lightning storm, and you can see sort of lightning striking the Celestial, like kind of Kirby crackling sort of thing. And Ahrishem doesn't do anything, and Thor's getting kind of pissed now. He's like,
speak to me, Celestial! Acknowledge me or face the consequences most dire!
And so the Celestial doesn't respond, and Thor's getting madder and madder.
Enough! I have given thee fair warning, but still thou doth ignore me. The patience of Thor is not without bounds. Others may hold thy spacefaring race in awe and worship thee as cosmic deities, but I do not. Thou art rude, pompous, and utterly lacking in proper manners.
And Thor takes his hammer and he smashes the plateau where Ahrishem's right foot is standing, and a giant plunk is just kind of smashes the top of the plateau to bits, and we see that it's done absolutely no good. So clearly Ahrishem is not relying on that for support. He's just kind of floating there in midair. And again, just completely ignoring Thor, and maybe even unaware of Thor, if you believe the captions. So we then shift scenes again, and it's back in the control room of Pegasus, and one of his flunkies is like,
Master, I've just detected a large unidentified object entering our atmosphere. It must have been shielding itself from our space radar until now.
Ooh, space radar.
Get it up on the Visi screen, says Pegasus.
And they're looking at it, and it's like,
look at the size of that thing. What is it?
Death. Death and destruction. Though I am certain the Celestials think of it as justice.
We then shift back to Thor, and he's still trying to get Ahrishem's attention. And he's picked up a new trick here. I've never seen him do quite this before. And he's got Mjolnir, and Mjolnir is kind of head down on the ground, and he's rotating it. And I can tell you what's happening. I mean, Thor can tell you here.
Slowly, ever so slowly, I must continue to rotate my enchanted hammer. This world's only hope is that I can draw forth a field of pure magnetic energy from the core of the planet itself and use it as a weapon against the Celestial.
And I guess he manages it, and he lifts the hammer up, and there's this like this stream of green goop or like green weird bubbly energy kind of coming up like water.
There, I've done it, but I must strike quickly. Not even Mjolnir can contain such awesome energies for long. Already I can feel the irresistible forces building, struggling, crying out for release.
And he shoots the ray at the Celestial and shouts,
so be it!
And there's this giant foom as Thor shoots this green energy beam at the Celestial. And it does a lot of damage to the surrounding mountains, but, you know, Celestial is completely unharmed.
Great Odin! The blast shattered mountain peaks for miles around, but Ahrishem barely took notice of it. I have failed.
Failed! And we get a little exposition here.
For long moments, Thor quietly gathers his strength. Though he knows his cause is hopeless, he is determined to strike again and again, as long as life doth endure. And then, as he chances to glance skyward, he sees the truth. The total, terrifying truth. His battle was a mockery. A sham. All of his efforts were misdirected from the very start. There was no reason for him to fight Ahrishem. None at all. Ahrishem is only the Celestial judge. But now, Exitar the Exterminator hath arrived.
And we get a double page spread here of the arrival of Exitar the Exterminator. And we see the Ahrishem, you know, he's many, many times bigger than Thor. But Exitar's foot is by itself bigger than Ahrishem. So this guy is big, folks. He's huge. And Thor's like, God's blood. And we get the next issue blurb. Thor loses his most precious possession as he battles alone against the Celestials. And that is Thor number 387. And we, of course, will have a few things to say about this issue. But first, an important message.
You like cheap comic books, right? Well, I'm Professor Allen, and I talk about cheap comic books on the Quarterbin Podcast. In every episode, I'll dissect a single comic from my collection, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for the issue. Forget about $4 new comics that you can read in 4 minutes, or crossover events that can cost $100 to collect. Join me in the Quarterbin, where even bad comics are a bargain, and good ones are a steal. The Quarterbin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky Podcast Network. Visit us at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or search Relatively Geeky or Quarterbin Podcast in iTunes. I guarantee it'll be worth every penny.
And we're back. So sometimes it's hard to know what to say about an issue other than I liked the issue and it works. This issue definitely works for me. One of the things that I like about this isn't really a story that we've seen a million times before. This is one of those stories that really, I think, highlights the nobility of Thor as a character and that he's willing to, to put himself at risk going against adversaries that he knows he's outclassed by to save a bunch of lowlives and thieves. Now, one might wonder, why would he do a thing like that? Well, it's because he's a hero. It's not inconsistent with things that we've seen Thor do in the past. He might be, to my taste, a little bit too willing to throw his life away against the Celestials for this wretched hive of scum and villainy. But at the same time, I think the story works. The artwork, I think, is uniformly good. I mean, we still have this obvious John Buscema, Sal Buscema influence. He's definitely kind of cycling some Kirby in there, though, too. And you can see it in some of the scenes in Asgard, like the scene where Heimdall comes bursting through the door into Baldur's throne room. Very, very much a Jack Kirby-inspired layout. The way the anatomy is drawn in there is really kind of a cross between Buscema and Kirby. And this is going to become more and more pronounced as the story goes on. You're definitely starting to see this Kirby influence kind of creeping into the artwork. In a lot of ways, I think this artwork, dare I say it, it's actually better than a lot of the stuff Buscema did. I like John Buscema's art, don't get me wrong. He drew a lot of Thor, and he drew a lot of other stuff that I like, including Conan. But Buscema has a pretty set, I don't know, what do you call, repertoire of poses, repertoire of different types of settings. John Buscema was not a comic book artist that was really suited to superhero comics. And that's why he did books like Thor, because you really have a little bit more you can do with this mythological setting, or when he was on Silver Surfer with the sort of outer space setting, and not so much a superhero hanging out in New York. And that's, of course, another reason why Buscema excelled on Conan, is because now you're dealing with a fantasy sword and sorcery type world. And of course, Buscema was also known for drawing Tarzan when at Marvel. There was that brief period of time in the 1970s when Marvel was publishing Tarzan comics and John Carter of Mars comics when DC lost the rights. And I thought that Buscema was a great artist for Tarzan. I mean, he worked well on Conan, he worked well on Tarzan too. But there's something about this particular run on Thor, and I'm looking at the artwork of Ron Frenz on here and saying, this is somebody who arguably is at the height of their powers. This is somebody who really is riffing on somebody else's theme, but doing a good job of it. It's an homage to Buscema, to the Buscemas, I should say, and an homage to Kirby without being too blatant of a ripoff of any of them. And I guess that's one of the things I like about it. So overall, I think this issue really works for me, and the story and both the story and the art work for me pretty well. All right, so that is about it for this week, folks. Once again, thanks very much for listening. Of course, we'll be back next week, hopefully, and we will continue on with the story. Don't forget, you can contact the show. You can email us. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com, and you can also join us over on the Facebooks. So look for Radio Free Asgard on Facebook, and you will find us. And with that, I am leaping, prancing even, back over the Rainbow Bridge, back to Midgard, and we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard. Radio Free Asgard is the property of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor, his supporting cast, and the various stories that we feature on the show are copyright Marvel Comics and are presented for review and educational purposes, and we hope you find them entertaining as well. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elvesmith, are copyright Motzvent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll tell your friends, or leave us an iTunes review, or even join our Facebook group. We do love hearing from our listeners. And if you didn't like it, well, oh well, we'll try to do better next time. Once again, thank you very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.